I'm Adam.
And I'm Mike.
Welcome to The Dad Experience,
a podcast where dads can connect
and openly share stories.
Here's what to expect on this episode of The Dad Experience.
One segment that Dave Letterman did for many years on the show, which I became the captain of, was called Dave's Record Collection. I began discovering a genre of music that I had certainly never heard of, and I think you had never heard of either, and probably most of your listeners won't have. Industrial musicals.
The Dad Experience.
Welcome to The Dad Experience. Another great episode. I'm extremely excited about today's episode. Today we have a great guy on, a dad, and his name is Steve Young. He's a writer. He's known for Late Night with David Letterman and The Late Show with David Letterman. He's written for The Simpsons, Olive, The Other Reindeer, and Maya and Marty. He's a co-author of Everything's Coming Up Profits, The Golden Age of Industrial Musicals, and he's the main subject in the documentary, which you can check out on Netflix and on many other places, Bathtubs Over Broadway. And it's all about little-known musicals written for companies, sales meetings, and conventions, as well as all those great things that Steve does. He's an instructor at New York University, and he lives in New York City. So, Steve, welcome to The Dad Experience.
Hey, thank you, Adam, and thank you for that comprehensive yet compact introduction. Sometimes it's difficult to explain the different facets of what I've been doing, but you did a nice job there. Thank you.
No, no problem. Well, you've got quite the resume, but you know, I reached out to you because I saw this great documentary called Bathtubs Over Broadway. And as many of my listeners know, I'm a music teacher and I love musicals too. So I'm kind of into that. So when I saw that came up, I'm like, this is different and I want to check it out and see what it's all about. Well, it piqued my interest. And, you know, I thought I'd reach out and see if you'd like to do the show and tell us a little bit about that. So I guess we'll start right off with, tell us a little bit about you have the book, Everything's Coming Up Profits, but also the documentary Bathtubs Over Broadway.
This is an entirely bizarre and wonderful hidden world of show business that I stumbled onto completely accidentally back in the 90s when I was a young writer at the Letterman Show. One segment that Dave Letterman did for many years on the show, which I became the captain of, was called Dave's Record Collection. And it would consist of Dave holding up real, unintentionally funny record albums on the show, and we'd play a little sample, and he would have a joke, and you'd do like six or eight of them at a time, and it would be a very fun found comedy piece. It was my job to go out to record stores and thrift shops and look for the raw materials for this segment, and I began discovering a genre of music that I had certainly never heard of, and I think you had never heard of either, and probably most of your listeners won't have. Industrial musicals, they're basically very much like Broadway shows, often in the millions of dollars to produce, but they were all about what it's like to work for a Ford tractor, selling new tractors, and how it's going to be a great new year, and here's the new specifications about the transmission and all that. It was this completely upside-down world of musical theater, which I knew practically nothing about anyway, but I just thought, oh my God, this is better than any comedy I could make up because it is crazy and it's real. And as time went on, I collected more and more of the records. I began tracking down people who wrote these shows and performed in them. And then fast forward to not too many years ago, a friend of mine, Sport Murphy, and I wrote a book on this topic. And then another friend of mine who I had met at the Letterman Show, who was a very talented, I would say genius director and editor, said she wanted to make a documentary about this topic. And that's what you saw, Bathtubs Over Broadway.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I had no clue, like you said, I had no clue of the genre. And, you know, the one thing that stood out to me when I watched the documentary was when you spoke to the folks that were actors in the musicals, you know, there were some big names in there, but what really sparked, piqued my interest and I thought was very heartwarming were some of the folks that are maybe weren't as known as some of the big time actors that were in there, and then just their joy for re-experiencing this and finding somebody that, you know, had an interest in it. And it was just so neat to me. Was there anything, you know, that you had when you were kind of doing Bathtubs Over Broadway or writing the book that just struck a chord with you as the journey went on that was like the most eye-opening thing? Or was there one experience throughout all that that just really, you know, kind of capped the whole experience?
There were a lot of elements of this long journey that turned out to be surprising for me. And one was my own emotional growth. When I first began finding these souvenir record albums, which were pressed up in tiny quantities, only to be given out to people who worked within the company and who'd been to the convention, and they were never for sale in record stores, and they were not to be played on the radio or any of that. At first, I found these things, and I just had this sort of cynical knee-jerk reaction. Oh my God, how horrifying. A whole musical about being a Coca-Cola bottler or about selling Westinghouse appliances. How sad and pathetic. And so I had this snarky attitude. And then as time went on and I got more curious and I found the people who did these things generally with no thought that anyone would ever understand what they did or recognize them for their really surprisingly great work. They were very excited. And I found myself inspired by hearing them talk about what it's like to work on something that you think is your best work and will probably never be heard outside of a tiny circle of people. So that was a big part of it for me. But there was so many other parts to it also. Just the fact that many of these shows were actually, in my opinion, genuinely terrific and not cheap, garbagey kitsch. There were some that were not very good, but there were so many that were really startlingly good. And these songs got stuck in my head, and I thought, I have to find out more about this because this is so bizarre.
Yeah, and like you said, when you listen to some, you know, I've not listened to the albums personally, but I've watched the documentary, which you had a lot of the music on, and it's not written as like what you would expect to go and see at a convention. You know, it's big time. It seemed like to me, and maybe you can kind of explain a little bit more, but it seemed like to me, it was like big budget, like full on productions and that they just put out there. And there was like no stone left unturned. It was like, we're going to reach out and we're going to do this to the nth degree. You know, what was your, did you find that, that there was any sort of, notice to that folks were just wanted to share it more, but there was just no outlet for that? Or
so difficult for these performers and writers. They had to make this bargain with the devil. All right, we're going to be paid really a lot of money, and we're going to work in our chosen field, maybe not exactly the part of the chosen field we thought we were going to get into. We're writing a musical about lawnmowers or floor tile or something, but people made their careers for decades out of doing these things, but they had to reconcile themselves to the fact that, okay, it's going to be next to impossible to forget about my neighbors or friends. Even in many cases, these people said, we could not really fully explain to our families oftentimes what this bizarre branch of show business was. And so that was painful, and they had to make this accommodation for their hopes for stardom or recognition. And then it was such a thrill for me decades later to show up often near the end of these people's lives to say, guess what? You thought this was all locked away in the past and forgotten. Well, no, the fragments that survived, people like me now are looking at and thinking about, and we want to talk to you about this and tell you, you know, that, that show you wrote for Massey Ferguson Tractors, that is a hell of a good show. So just know that someone cares. And that is the heart of the movie, one of the hearts of the movie. People go in to watch this movie and think it's just going to be some light, kitschy put down of some strange, pathetic form of entertainment. And then you get into all the deepest, dramatic questions about what is art? How do you value what you've done with your life? How do you connect with your fellow human beings? It bites off an awful lot in this movie that people aren't expecting. And people come out of it and they say, you know, we expected we'd be laughing. We didn't think we'd be crying.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. So you kind of mentioned it a little bit. What was it? What were some of those interactions like when you met these folks in person, reaching out to them where they did this genre that could have been 30, 40 years ago? And all of a sudden you're in their lives again. Or like, we never thought we would have this experience. What were those meetings like? You know, were they embrace you with open arms, or did they kind of want to shut off about it? Or how did that work out?
There was often a little bit of skepticism at first, coolness. Part of it was, if I identified myself as, I'm a writer for the Letterman program, people had little red flags. Oh, someone is coming to make fun of us. And I understand that, because that's how this whole project started. We were looking for records to make a joke about, and a little sort of put down of something done honestly, and we'd make a snarky remark. But I had moved past that after a couple of years, and I was genuinely curious, and I became enamored of the quality of this work and fascinated by the world that these people existed in the shadows of show business. And pretty quickly, people were able to tell that I was a fan, and I genuinely wanted to connect with them and find out about their work and their lives. And then people would loosen up. But there were some amusing times when I would get in touch with somebody. I remember I emailed a gentleman. I said, "Hi, you don't know me, but I have the 79 B.F. Goodrich tire dealer conference show that you worked on, and I think it's really cool. And I would love to ask you about it." And the guy wrote back, "Very funny. Who put you up to this?" He was sure that it was a practical joke. And yeah, then we got past that. But yeah, people don't dare to believe that after all this time, something that was so carefully off the public radar screen could have 40 or 50 years later suddenly surfaced and people cared about it. It was more than they could have ever hoped for.
Yeah. And kind of the flip side of that coin is there's some pretty big name actors that have done some of these shows. What was it like interacting with them? And like when you brought this, it's, you know, this such an obscure genre, an obscure thing that was going on, when you brought this up and say, "Hey, I'd like to talk to you about this." What was that like? Because some of these folks are, you know, well-known actors and actresses. Oh, yeah. And I don't want to give everything away because I don't want to tell them the documentary. But, you know, what was that like?
Well, we can mention a few names. Cheetah Rivera, when she first came to New York and was breaking into show business, she did some of these. A young Florence Henderson, years before the Brady Bunch. Martin Short in the early 70s, coming out of Toronto and getting any gig he could. These people look back on this with great fondness. Not only, as I said, not only were they paid very well, but they were working with top-of-the-line directors, choreographers, set designers. The money was there to hire everybody of top caliber. And they would meet people who they were going to be working with again and again. And they would marvel at the ability of the writers to turn something, let's say, unpromising as a topic into really catchy and exciting songs. And Florence Henderson, for instance, she said, "Those Oldsmobile dealer shows I did, I would put those up against anything that was on Broadway. They were that good."
Wow. Wow. That's impressive. It's very impressive.
It was. And people gasp in the movie when they hear how much money was spent producing these things. Because I think people, even once they grasp the notion of what these were, they still think, well, it was probably like the staff talent show in the cafeteria with the couple of guys from the marketing department and somebody from the accounting department doing a little karaoke or something. No, we're talking about the biggest venues in the world, in Las Vegas and New York City, and resorts in the Arizona or the Caribbean, filled to the brim with thousands of people, sales force people and managers and distributors. And the sets are enormous, and the orchestra is vast and powerful, and it is all crisply, professionally done. And when it was done right, it really did affect an audience. People watching a show that tells them the work you do is important, not only is it going to make you money, but if you're selling the new Ford tractors, you're helping mankind, because productivity is going to be up and hunger is going to go down. It's just going to be better for civilization. And you're in the middle of it. You're a hero for selling these things. So it could be very effective.
Yeah, that's it, and it is. And the music's great. So speaking of the music, what is your you know, I'm sure you've got many, but what is your kind of your favorite out of all the things that you've listened to and heard or seen clips of, what is your favorite musical out of everything that you've kind of researched and found and collected?
Well, I'm very fond of one called Diesel Dazzle, which was for the Detroit Diesel Engine Division of General Motors in 1966 and had a young Hal Linden in it before he was Barney Miller. And the man who composed the music from that is named Hank Beebe, and you see quite a bit of him in the movie. He's in his 90s now, but he is a sharp as a tack and wise and wonderful and one of my greatest dear friends and mentors. And without giving away too much about the movie, he and I end up collaborating on a song together that's in the movie that I'm thrilled by. But the other musical you can't escape from this genre, and it plays a big part in bathtubs over Broadway also, is something called The Bathrooms Are Coming, which was an American Standard plumbing fixture musical in 1969. And is just everything that you hope it could be. And then it's more, because there's the record album, spoiler alert, 16 millimeter film surfaces. I meet the people involved with the show, and suddenly I'm tangled up deeply and very happily in their personal lives. And kind of an overwhelming emotional experience for me out of what seems like the silliest thing you're ever going to encounter.
Right. And, you know, so what is, from what you've found over this experience, what do you think the number one takeaway has been from all of this that you've learned? You know, you said you kind of started out as it being a comedy segment where you found the album, and then you kind of started off maybe with it being kind of a comedy thing, but it obviously grew into more, as you've said. What do you think your favorite, you know, thing that happened or your biggest experience you happened from all of this that your takeaway is?
Well, we have a song at the end of the movie, which I wrote with Hank Beebe. And the theme of the song, we tried very hard to sum up the lessons of the movie. And there are a lot of them. But I think the biggest one is just be open to strange things that catch your fancy and that might lead you down wonderful, unexpected paths if you just follow through on your curiosity and see where it goes, because this whole movie is the ultimate example of that. From me starting a tiny little curiosity years ago that I stumbled on accidentally, and I just kept letting my curiosity take me to the next step. Oh, I wonder who I could find, or I wonder how many records I could find. What if I called somebody? What if I went to a record show? What if I went to the Library of Congress? It just kept going. And the more it went, the bigger it got. And I don't know if anything that wonderful will ever happen in my life again in terms of just pursuing an odd hobby or something. But I just want people to think every day you might wake up and it will be the day that you begin to discover something that will change your life.
The journey that I followed through the documentary is just, it was more than I expected when I saw it come out, and I thought it was great. And this is a great place for us to take a short break. Don't forget that the Dad Experience is a part of the Parents on Demand Network. If you love the Dad Experience, stick around to the end of the podcast to hear another great about another great podcast that is on that network that I'm sure if you love the Dad Experience, we're sure you're going to like. So stick around after the break for more with Steve Young. Welcome back to the Dad Experience. We're talking to Steve Young, a writer. He was a writer for the David Letterman Show, and he was a co-author on a book coming up. Everything's Coming Up, Prophets, as well as the main subject in Bathtubs Over Broadway. So we're gonna kind of shift gears a little bit. So the reason that I reached out to you, Steve, was one, I love the documentary, but two, you have two daughters, and you featured them partly in the film, on and off. And I thought, wow, this would be so cool to just share this documentary with our listeners that I think is so great, but also kind of tie in, you know, your parenting experience. So you're a dad to daughters. What do they think of their dad's profession and everything you've done and your history with writing and all those great things?
Well, when they were younger, it was nice because in New York City, you have parents doing a wide range of professions and occupations. And maybe it was a little bit cooler that their dad worked on a television show and he was a comedy writer instead of being another lawyer or guy on Wall Street, which certainly you can do very well with that. And maybe I should have done that instead. But here I am. There was a little extra cool factor. My daddy works for David Letterman. My daddy is a comedy writer. So at a certain age, that's a little nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I bet. I mean, everybody, even young and old, even though he has a show on Netflix now, they know David Letterman's a household name. So I'm sure that was cool to be able to say that you were a part of that show for them. So kind of also going a little bit deeper, what did they, you featured him in the documentary. What do they think about the documentary and what do they think of you and how this kind of went from a segment that you were going to, that you had on David Letterman with the albums to finding that one album and then creating this next journey that you had? What do they think of all that?
Well, it was kind of an overwhelming experience for both of them to see the completed movie. They had known for the 4 years that it took to make the movie that I was involved with this on a regular basis, and I would go to Chicago or Los Angeles, and we would shoot something, and then I'd go somewhere else, and we'd shoot something, but they didn't really know what it was going to be. I think a lot of people, and maybe yourself, heard about the movie and read a line or two about it and thought it would be a sort of amusing, tongue-in-cheek, educational documentary about something strange. But when my family saw that it was a movie largely about me and my surprising growth and journey and overwhelming, life-changing experiences as I pursued this hobby, they were pretty stunned. I never forced my daughters to sit down and listen to these records with me. I might have been whistling them around the house or humming songs or whatever, but they were not deeply following Daddy's ultra nerdy collection news, which was fine. I did not feel it was my place to try to indoctrinate them, and I'm glad I didn't, because then they got to see the best possible version of the story made by Dava, the director who packaged this all, not only as a look at this bizarre form of show business, but what it means to people to be interested in something and connect with each other. And I wish everybody could have that experience of their children seeing a movie that truly explained the best of them in such an elegant way. Not many people will ever have the wonderful experience of that I did have. So I'm very grateful for that.
Right. And then, that now that it's on film and it's been created and it's been in print, it's a nice legacy for you and your family, I would think, too, which is pretty neat.
And so many other families who you see representatives of in this movie, people in their 70s, 80s, 90s, who now finally have this extremely entertaining, beautifully put together film that explains them to their children. All these years, and I couldn't quite explain why I was going to Las Vegas, and it was something about International Harvester, or it was something about Ever Ready batteries, and in your eyes glazed over it. Well, here, just watch the movie. Now you'll finally understand my life. And so many families, people I've never met have just emailed me, thank you, and thank director Dava Wisenant for making this movie that explained our bewildering careers to our families at last.
Yeah, and kind of, it's something that I wanted to ask you earlier, and it seems like a good place for it, have you experienced, and I know there's a little bit of this in the movie, but, it doesn't go very deep. Are companies, have you heard that companies are still doing this to this day, in 2019? Are they still using these at some of their conventions or something like this?
There are a few companies that seem to really still like this, and I understand why. Even if musical theater fell out of fashion by the end of the 70s or 80s or whatever, and younger people didn't like it as much, it is kind of back now. I mean, you can't get a ticket for Hamilton. So many Broadway shows are very, very hot with every generation now. So this has kind of circled back. And the power of these productions, when they're done right, with music that gets into your brain and emotion and all the range of human drama right on stage in front of you, when it comes together correctly, it will always be compelling. And I think a sales meeting. I've never really been to one, but I imagine there's a lot of speeches and you kind of get tired and you shift in your seat and you wish something fun would happen. And then if the lights go down and the orchestra strikes up the overture, how could your blood not start pumping? So I think there's always going to be a use for this. A few companies are still putting money into these.
That's cool. And it does. It seems like it would be something fun to pique interest and get people excited. I mean, we've all been in meetings where you sit and hear somebody talk to you all the time. It's not as fun as experiencing a live Broadway show written and done by, you know, top-notch actors and writers and musicians. So, I mean, that does seem like a really great business model when you really think about it. If you think about it on the surface, yeah, it might be funny, but when you think about that as a business model, it's like, wow, yeah, we're going to grab attention and get people excited. It is very, very cool. So, you know, kind of before we hit our reoccurring segment that we like to do here, what has been your favorite thing so far about being a parent?
Well, I do love seeing my daughters deeply, deeply enjoy something. I'll always remember my older daughter, Rebecca. I think she was about six, and we had a tape of Mary Poppins, the original Mary Poppins. And she was watching it, and I remember there was some scene, it might have been with like all the chimney sweeps and the rooftops and everything, and it was crazy and beautiful and musical and kinetic and elegant. And she was just like giggling and howling with glee, and my heart just felt like it was gonna burst with just, I know life is not always happy and we will all struggle and she will have bad days and we will all have bad days, but right now she is experiencing joy and I love that.
That's great. So you kind of maybe have already hit this, but we do a reoccurring segment here on the Dad Experience and things we can't wait to see again through our children's eyes. It could be anything from a show to an event to just college, whatever, but we always ask our guests, what is one thing that you're really excited about seeing again through your children's eyes and kind of experience it again and maybe see that joy that you had come full circle into your children? Is there something out there that you're really excited to see or have seen?
Well, there are a lot of places I've been in the past year. I've been to like 40 film festivals with Bathtubs Over Broadway, and I've been to a lot of places that I've really enjoyed, and I'm sure someday My kids will love to see New Orleans or Sedona, Arizona, or any number of places. But I think the thing that you really just can't replicate until you're older and a parent yourself is the hilarity that is like a 2 or 3 or 4 year old. I've often said to people that for all the comedy that talented comedy writers have created over decades or centuries or millennia, it is a drop in the bucket compared to how hilarious little kids are. And when you got to be ready to run to some notebook or something and write down these priceless things that you're always going to remember in your family. And we have scraps of paper with these priceless malapropisms and everything hilarious the kids said. And someday I hope one or both of my daughters will be able to experience these bizarre verbal gems pouring out of the mouth of their own children.
What a great idea, too, and a beautiful thing to do. That's something that I'm going to steal from you and start doing. My kids are younger, so that sounds like a great idea, and I'm excited to start doing that. So many of the listeners will, too.
You're going to miss a few, but, boy, hopefully you can snag a few gems that 20 years later you'll all be laughing at together.
I bet. So, you know, before we close out the show, Steve, can you let the listeners know where they can find you, you know, maybe on social media, and where they can find the documentary, how they can get it, or even the book?
Oh, yes. Well, happy to tell you all about that. Bathtubs Over Broadway is on Netflix now. It's also on Amazon and iTunes and Google Play and Vudu and various other platforms. The website is bathtubsoverbroadway.com, and that will be your portal to anything you want to see, like the trailer for the movie or an extensive list of awards that it's won. David Wisenand has won all sorts of directing prizes and filmmaking prizes with this thing. I'm on Twitter, although I'm not as avid a tweeter as some, but Pants Steve, going back to the days when Dave Letterman's company, Worldwide Pants, was giving out email addresses, and I had an early Pants Steve account. But Pants Steve on Twitter and Instagram. And the book is right now, a second printing of the book is on the way to the warehouses. It sold out when the movie went on Netflix and there was a stampede for it. And it'll be back available in a week or two, I hope. And you can learn more about the book and the whole phenomenon at industrialmusicals.com. But yeah, plenty to listen to and look at on all these sites. And the movie is a bizarrely hilarious and uplifting film. I could not be more pleased with how it's turned out. And obviously it made an impression on you, Adam, because here we are.
Yeah, it did. And, not only, I am a musician by trade and a music teacher, but, past that, what really caught me is some things that you mentioned, like you said, about just the heartwarming stories on there and some of the credit to these folks that you obviously worked hard and put a lot of passion into it and are now being brought to the forefront. And kudos to you guys for doing that for those folks that may never have thought that that would ever happen to them. So it is a great, it's the whole package. If you're looking for something funny, it's got it in there. If you're looking for heartwarming, it's got it in there. So, I know folks are going to love it. So thanks again for joining us. It was such a great time and it was a pleasure to talk to you, Steve.
Oh, well, a pleasure for me to run through some of these, anecdotes and so on. As you can tell, I do love talking about the movie, but I don't think I've ever really had the occasion to talk about what it meant as a father to have my daughters go on this journey sort of on a parallel track of seeing me undergo this thing and then see the movie at the end sort of summing it all up. So nice angle on that.
Well, thank you. Don't forget that the Dad Experience is a part of the Parents On Demand Network. If you want to get a hold of us, experienceanddad@gmail.com. You may have a question for me. You may have a question for Steve or a past guest. Let us know. I can always reach out to those guys and maybe get an answer. And maybe you want to be on the show or have a topic you want to discuss. Let us know. Hit us up there. We're also on Instagram, the Dad Experience, and most other major social networks. So thanks so much. And we'll catch you next time on the Dad Experience.
This podcast is a proud member of Parents On Demand, a network of high-quality shows for families just like yours. Download our free network app on Apple and Android and listen to your favorite episodes on the go.